Welcome to the HJ Talks About Abuse podcast. In this podcast, we talk about sexual abuse cases in the hope it will assist listeners in openly discussing topics which have been ignored for too long. This podcast is brought to you by the abuse team at Hugh James. We are lawyers, so we do tend to speak about the legal aspects of abuse cases, but we aren't too shy to speak up about the broader issues faced by survivors too.
Hello, podcast listeners. I'm Alan Collins, and I'm joined today by my colleague, Sam Barker.
Hello.
We both work in the abuse team here in London, and today we're going to be talking about safeguarding in faith settings. The all-parliamentary group Safeguarding in Faith Settings is going to be holding a special meeting next week, and I understand that you, Sam, are going to be addressing it.
That's right. So the all-party parliamentary group has been set up in relation to adult survivors of child sexual abuse and has been putting together a number of reports over the past year. I think we've actually done a podcast on one
earlier this year,
yep. Alan, I think it was. So basically what this upcoming hearing is about is positions of trust within faith settings.
Can you tell us what that's all about?
Yeah.
What does it mean?
No problem. So the Sexual Offences Act 2003 has offences within that which criminalise sexual activity with a child between the age of 16 and 18, or under the age of 18, by a person in a position of trust. A position of trust in that context being, for example, a teacher, you know, a parole officer, something like that, you know.
Someone employed, so to speak.
Yeah, it's kind of institutional in a way. But it, under that definition, there is no inclusion of faith settings. So,
for example, a preacher, priest, vicar.
Elder.
If they went and abused sexually a 17-year-old, that currently is not sexual abuse within a position of trust.
No, because position of trust doesn't include any kind of religious setting. It's all about care, supervision and training, and the people who carry that out are, for example, teachers, in that definition there is no inclusion of faith settings.
I don't get that, because don't they say a priest, for example, has a sort of pastoral role, you know, to look after the spiritual needs of the individual members of their church, congregation.
Exactly.
What's the logic behind the distinction?
Well, that's what will be ventilated next week and raised at these hearings, and why we say there needs to be an amendment to positions of trust to largely reflect the laws in other countries, which include religious ministers, leaders, spiritual advisors, things like that.
So is there any logical explanation why here in the UK we're saying, the law is saying, that in the faith context,
it doesn't apply.
It doesn't apply.
No, not really. You know, there was obviously white papers, and I'm looking right here at a Sexual Offences Amendment Bill, Age of Consent and Abusive Position of Trust. And that goes into, the obvious public outrage the public would have in, let's say a 30-year-old teacher having a sexual relationship with a 16, 17-year-old student, but that didn't include in this research or in these papers that I'm seeing religious organisations and settings. So
playing devil's advocate here. So if you have a 17-year-old who has a consensual...
Yeah, we're talking about consent here as well.
Yeah, has a consensual sexual relationship with his or her preacher.
Currently, under the laws as it is, that's not a criminal offence, because a preacher wouldn't be covered under the definition of positions of trust.
So why should it become a criminal offence?
Well, because these roles encompass so many of the things we're looking at when we're, you know, defining a teacher position, for example. Let's take a teacher at a school. There's a significant level of trust placed in that person. There's an imbalance of power between the two, arguably. There's vulnerabilities in relation to the 16, 17-year-old that make that a situation where that it would be morally abhorrent for that teacher to take advantage of those vulnerabilities and engage in a sexual relationship or activity with that student.
Okay, so playing devil's advocate here again, so you can sort of see where critics of reform might come in here. Let us say we have a 17-year-old goes to the church youth club,
mm-hmm.
and he, she meets a youth leader there who does a bit of preaching and teaching, and he, she is, say, 20. So the age gap is 3, and they become more than just friends. They form a relationship.
Wait, sorry, how old is one and how old is the other?
17 and 20. So let's say the youth club leader, teacher, preacher, whatever you want to call him stroke her, is 20, and the youth club member is 17. So the age gap is 3 years. So folk might say, well, outside that kind of situation, would we be saying, oh no, that's not allowed, because the age gap is relatively insignificant? If they're 17 and 20 respectively, it might be said. So why would we want to criminalise that just because the pair of them go to youth club and one's a member of the youth club and the other one's because he's 3 years old and does a bit of teaching, preaching and all the rest of it?
Yep.
We go and criminalise them.
But what you're talking about there is a situation where the person who is teaching, preaching, all of those things is afforded a significant level of trust by the organisation in which he is a member. So to take advantage of that position, we say, should be criminalised. Now, obviously, you're taking a situation which makes it seem extremely innocuous, which I completely understand, but that would be a matter for sentencing in my view.
Yeah, but would the general public say, well, hang on a minute, you know, should we be interfering in that kind of scenario? Maybe if the guy, or there might not be a guy, might be, doesn't matter whether it's he, she. Let's say they're 30 and the youth club member is 17, then eyebrows might start to raise and think that's totally inappropriate. But if the age gap is so minor, and it does appear to be a genuine boyfriend-girlfriend situation, why should the state interfere?
Well, it's one of those situations where if it's a position of trust, let's take your exact same situation and say that the relationship occurs at a school. 20-year-old teacher, 17-year-old girl. In that situation, wouldn't it be morally abhorrent for that teacher to engage in a sex act with a student at the school, despite the fact there's such a small age limit?
Well, that came up in Emmerdale, the soap, didn't it? You know, the teacher, she formed a relationship, if I remember rightly, with her sixth form student who was 17. I think the so-called relationship started when he was younger, but I think the point was reached when he was over the age of 16, and she was rumbled, prosecuted and sent to prison. And there was a lot of feedback, wasn't there? A sizable proportion of the general public thought
it was okay.
It was okay.
Yeah.
So anyway,
that's also anyway,
so. But
in...
Parliament has said it's not okay. So yeah. Parliament has gone and said no, it's totally wrong for teachers to have relationships with their pupils, regardless of age, just because they're over the age of 16, because of the power imbalance, the pressures and all the things that you spoke about.
That's right, yeah.
But I'm wondering whether, if the law is going to be reformed further, how it is that those parliamentarians are going to get over this issue once again of, well, if the age gap is so small, is it an abuse? Is there an abuse of position of trust? Yeah, so that's going to be, I would have thought, an interesting debate.
An interesting point. And but the thing about it is, at the moment, religious organisations just simply don't fall within that definition of positions of trust.
And I conceive, certainly from the cases that you and I work on, how those in positions of authority in religious settings, whether they're priests, preachers, elders, whatever, do use, sadly, tragically, those positions to abuse sexually children and young people. So you can quite understand why the law needs to be brought into line with others who are in positions of trust. I don't follow the, don't see why there should be a distinction personally. I think the law should apply to all these situations. But I think it's an interesting question.
about where the age gap is
relatively minor. How are you going to deal with that? Does it mean that one of them has to leave the youth club so that they can pursue their relationship, if it is a genuine relationship? Well, interesting question, I think.
It is an interesting question, but you would hope that the person who's in the position of trust, so the position of trust, would be making a decision to leave that position or wait until indeed that youth becomes 18.
Take another scenario. Let's say you take the same two people, but they actually met at work.
And there's a boss.
And, yeah, well, you know, let's say he does have a position of some seniority or authority over the 17-year-old. You know, you say, let's say the 17-year-old is there on some kind of work experience and the 20-year-old is still a junior employee, but a permanent employee. Is that a position of trust situation that would fall within?
I think lots of people meet at work and have
relationships and get married and have families and all the rest of them. You know, it's a place where lots of people meet and live happily ever after. Of course, there are other cases where that doesn't happen, of course.
My understanding of the legislation, or what I'm recalling from it now, and I'm sure someone will correct me if I'm wrong, but in a workplace setting, the age limit's 16. So it would be criminalised behaviour if it was the sexual relationship was with the child under the age of 16.
But why isn't the case. But why the distinction between forming so-called relationship in a religious setting and that of the same sort of situation arising at work? Boy meets girl, girl meets boy meets boy, girl meets girl. You know, why would we want the law to intervene if they're both over the age of consent, if they're at work, but we do want to intervene if they are over the age of consent and they meet at the church youth club?
Well, let's explore that idea. I think that the reason why the APPG has called on the group that I represent at ICSA, which is the XJW, ex-Jehovah's Witness, Advocates Opposing Crimes Against Children, to put in submissions to next week's hearing is for that exact reason. And that is because it demonstrates within these kind of religions, particularly religions like Jehovah's Witnesses, the authority, the power, the unquestioning faith that is really hammered into all members of the organisation, of men in senior positions, and particularly ones that hold positions of authority like an elder or ministerial servant, because it is just all throughout their literature. Of course, this might be denied by the official branch office, but I've got examples here which show that they say within the organisation that these elders have essentially been appointed by God and circuit overseas have been appointed by God, and that they appoint ministerial servants. So I'm quoting here from one of their magazines that's disseminated throughout the organization. Therefore, the appointments are to be viewed as being made by the Holy Spirit, just as overseers and ministerial servants were appointed theocratically in the first century. The same is true today. So taking that kind of, you know, how people, young people within that organization would view people in positions of power, or, you know, elders within the organization, it's essentially like God, which takes it to a very different point of vulnerability than, you know, just in an everyday workplace. I think that's why the APPG is asking to hear from organizations like this.
That would be your logical, legal and moral and common sense distinction between the scenarios that
I would think so. But it's also because at work you get these positions of authority rather than a position of kind of implicit trust and, you know, unquestioning faith in that person. There should be procedures in place in workplaces that allow people to question what their boss tells them or take a grievance elsewhere, etc. Let me read you again from Jehovah's Witness literature about, you know, how can we display our gratitude and esteem for the older men being elders or overseers in the congregation? Paul answers, be obedient to those who are taking the lead amongst you and be submissive. Yes, we are to obey them and to be submissive, to yield to them. So we're talking about things that are, you know, literature teachings through the organization, which just, you know, it's all about being unquestioning. It's about being submissive. It's about following orders as if they're handed down from God. Him or herself, however they look at whatever gender guides.
Sure. Okay. So you're hoping that next week at the meeting in Parliament that some good questions are going to be asked, which will help focus minds on the need for reform.
I think so. That's what the intention of these hearings are. And it's not, let me just stress, it's not to pick on any specific religion. It's certainly not to be picking on Jehovah's Witnesses. There'll be other people from other religions and religious organisations and advocacy groups there making a case for this change in the law. And it's not just because of, you know, how it is within Jehovah's Witnesses, but Jehovah's Witnesses as a religion shows the kind of power, trust, authority placed in senior members of congregations, which would make it morally outrageous, and the public would certainly raise eyebrows for that person to then engage in a sexual relationship with that.
And I think your solution is an amendment to the 2003 Act that follows the Crimes Act 1958 in Victoria.
Correct.
So that basically if the young person concerned is subjected to care, supervision and authority, they, you know, the so-called relationship, it's not a relationship, but you know what I mean, gets caught by that piece of legislation, so that anybody who is exercising some form of care, supervision or authority over the young person is basically not allowed.
Yeah, that would be criminalised, and the definition there, which doesn't factor into the UK legislation, does include a religious or spiritual guide or a leader or official, including a lay member of a church or religious body, however any such guide, leader, official, church or body is described, who provides care, advice or instruction to the young person or has authority over that young person. So set out in pretty plain terms there.
Yeah, and that would, from what you're saying here, it would capture the situation that the APPG wants to try and, by the sounds of it, nip in the bud.
Indeed, it would.
Okay. Well, that's all pretty heady stuff.
Indeed.
A lot there to think about and exercise the intellectual parts, so to speak, and which always need nourishing. And thank you, podcast listeners.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you for listening to this episode of HJ Talks About Abuse. You can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play. If you would like to speak to Alan or I about something you have heard this week, or even if you would like to suggest a topic for a future episode, please do get in touch at aboutabuse@hjtalks.co.uk.